Mackenzie, we are watching Goon this week with Mr. Sean William Scott, who's not Canadian, but joins a Canadian hockey team in here. Just wondering for you, aside from hockey, what's your favorite Canadian export?
Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, that is an excellent choice. I didn't even go. People, yes.
Followed closely by Will Arnett, actually. Oh. Another great Canadian. Yeah.
They breed him well up there for comedy.
They do. Just they are funny.
Clever,
I don't know if it's
because
they're always like the butt of the joke of us asshole Americans and they have to like be funny as a defense.
That could be it.
I don't know. Okay, what's yours?
I guess I'll go maple syrup. I would assume that was originated in Canada. I don't know who I'm offending out there, but like on pancakes.
It's on the fucking flag. So it feels like
I hope so.
The maple leaf is their thing. I feel like they have comfortably laid claim to it, would be my guess.
My first choice was going to be the wildlife, but that's not technically an export because I don't think they send them here, but like moose and Canada gooses, you know?
I mean, to be fair, I don't think animals acknowledge borders. You know what I mean? They just cross where they want to fucking cross.
They have dual citizenship. I think they go where they want, yeah.
As they should.
And also, okay, I forgot to shout. I should have shouted this out first, honestly, and I apologize to any of my hockey friends and other friends who have the same comedy taste as me, but Letterkenny, the TV show, might be my favorite Canada export as well. So
Ooh, very funny,
very witty, very clever.
You know, you're like the 27th person to tell me to watch that, and I just need to do it already. I hear nothing but good things about it.
Give it a shot. It just wrapped up and it's finale, like 11th seasons
it
was
just
the series finale.
Up?
Yeah. It's only 6 episodes or 8 episodes a season though. Like it's short.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Adding it to the list of Canadian exports.
Wonderful. Let's get into Goon.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And today we are wrapping up Inaugural April with the final one that I haven't seen, which is Goon.
You said it in a slightly more positive tone of voice than last week when you hadn't watched the movie yet. You went, Goon.
I know. So I was not looking forward to this experience, I will say. But, you know, we'll get into that in just a second. But for now, what are we drinking?
Well, we had to, as we said in the start, do something Canadian. So I ran a ball hockey league for a little bit, a little different than ice hockey. You're playing on foot and just running and pounding your joint. That's why my knees are shit now. But I hopefully some of those gents and ladies are listening to this episode. So I had to go out and get some Canadian booze for us. So we made sort of a take on a Canadian old fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
We grabbed some Canada Club whiskey, which I had only ever had in plastic bottles on airplanes before. But we went and got the real thing. We made an old fashioned out of that. And I sweetened it a little bit with some cherry and chocolate bitters because let's face it, Doug Glatt, for all the fighting he does in this, he's kind of a sweetheart.
Yes.
He's kind of a doofus, but yeah.
He is a sweetheart, and we should give some credit. Our cocktails were made for us today, which was nice. Recipe provided by Lamar. Mine's a little less sweet because I'm not as into the sweet, but this one's a little smoky. Mine's a little smoky, which I like. The little set that citrus on fire.
Yeah, Skylar did the little, like, spray the orange peel
on the mesh. I will leave it
to
him to describe in some way. Yeah, we have a cocktail consultant, if y'all didn't know. But anyway, he did the match. And the flame and spritz it and whatever. It's delicious. So anyway, cheers to that.
Cheers.
All right, friends, we're going to dig into some basics and then we'll talk Goon, as I said last time. I just still think it's a terrible name, to be fair. I will, no spoilers, say it was a much better experience than anticipated.
Yay.
So I get to eat my words this time, which I know Lamar was looking forward to.
I was very much excited.
But it is a terrible name, I will say. Like, if you want to get people to go watch it, it's a terrible name.
Yes. And I think to your point, I don't remember seeing back when this first came out, I believe it was like, what, 2010? Do you have the year written?
2011.
Down? 2011. I don't remember seeing any marketing for it. I don't even think I heard of this movie until like 2016 when I finally watched it.
Yeah.
So the marketing sucked on this because
and
I'm a hockey guy. So the fact that I never saw any promotion and like you said last week, the movie poster, the taglines, it's very bro-y. And that's not, the movie's got heart. It's so much more than I think what you're going to expect based on what you would see public facing.
Yeah, it looks very doofusy on the cover, like the tagline, all the things like you said. And even actually, if you watch the trailer, I will say, because again, I hadn't seen this, but I did watch the trailer when we talked about it.
Okay.
And the trailer makes it seem a little better than even the cover makes it like that you expect, right? And like even the summary, you know, I'd seen the cover and I'd read the summary and read the tagline and I was like, this sounds terrible. And then you watch the trailer And even the trailer's a little better.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that. I will give it that. It's like, it feels like it just was very poorly marketed. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't actually watch the trailer, so I can't speak to that. But I will say the term goon, obviously, it's been in hockey terminology for a long time. It's just a guy who is hired to be a protector. So
right,
to get anybody outside of that market.
Exactly.
Yeah. Somebody who doesn't watch hockey would be like, why am I going to watch this? I can't think of what. You know, the football parallel would be of what do you call a football player who's just kind of a dick and is like going out and like
an
playing
offensive
dirty.
Tackle.
Oh, wow. Well, if there's any offensive tackles out there.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean they're the muscle.
Or
That's
were
what
you
I'm
making
saying.
A pun of like they're an offensive tackle? Like they just do whatever
you
they
give
want.
Give me far too much credit, they to said, be honest. Like I did not think that through.
He's unfiltered. He says what he wants when he wants. He's an offensive tackle.
Listen, I've got good puns now and again, but I'm not that punny. But I'm just saying those guys are the muscle. Like I would say they're the muscle equivalent. But they have a better name, you know what I mean? Again, but that would be still a poor movie name, to be fair.
Yes.
Offensive Tackle.
I think that could be an Adam Sandler project in the works. That could be the sequel to Waterboy.
Listen, he fucking would, you know what I mean? Don't get me started on Adam Sandler. Anyway, but yes, I will say it is a term that I just don't think appeals to mass audiences.
Yeah.
And clearly they didn't market the trailers very well. Same thing. I don't remember this ever being marketed. Mm-hmm. And it speaks like we're jumping ahead as far as stats, but it like shows in the budget. The budget was $12 million,
mm-hmm.
and this thing only made a little shy of $7 million.
That's a bummer.
So yeah, it definitely took a loss, which is interesting because they made a second one. So I haven't
seen
the second
one. It must, as I said, I didn't hear of it for 5 or 6 years until after it came out. And I loved it. And it became this cult classic. And actually, in that hockey league, we would do these social events every year outside off the hockey rink to just give some time to hang out. And we rented an Alamo Drafthouse theater and screened this. And the majority of the people that I played hockey with had not seen this film. And everyone walked out of the theater
even
like, oh, that was so good.
So even hockey people didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it became more of like a cult classic, word of mouth. People spread this around, which led to the sequel, which is okay. It's not as good as the first.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to do for sequels. Okay, well, we're going to dig in because we got a lot to say about this one.
Oh, yeah.
And so back to basics. Again, it's Goon 2011. Ratings are pretty decent. We got kind of a wider spread than I expected across platforms. So like on IMDb, for example, it's 6.8 out of 10. And then on Rotten Tomatoes, we've got an 81% from critics. So kind of an alignment of, you know, hey, it's a much better film than you think. And then a 71% from audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting kind of mix here, actually, kind of running the gambit. This was directed by Michael Dowse, and he doesn't do a lot. He hasn't done a lot. You know, I've seen one of his movies besides this one.
I was looking at the list and I went, okay, I've heard of a bunch of these, but he doesn't have any breakthrough hits.
I think the only reason you've heard of them is because FUBAR is like 12 of them.
I didn't even realize that one was on there. I saw 8-Bit Christmas, which I remember being fairly popular a couple of years ago. Take Me Home Tonight, which came out about a decade ago, I think. Stuber with Kumail Nanjiani.
See, we watch different things.
Well, no, the thing is,
I haven't seen any of them,
but I've heard of all of
them.
So better job marketing for those films than they did for this.
So I had the only one that I have heard of and actually seen of his was What If? And that was very slightly more mainstream, mostly, I think, because it had Daniel Radcliffe in it, which is obviously of Harry Potter fame for most people. I think know this at this point. But if not, after his Harry Potter craziness, you know, he's done largely independent films, smaller films.
Yeah.
And I think he does that on purpose. It's, you know, from an art perspective, not a money making perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was What If, which was actually pretty cute, pretty well done, I thought. But it is about like a guy who like falls in love with a girl as a boyfriend. So anyway, it's that kind of thing. But I would say most of his stuff, no, you're not going to know. You're not going to know most of what he's been a part of for sure.
Agree.
From a writing perspective, Jay Baruchel, or how do you say his last name? Do you
I
think
don't
that's
know if
right?
It's Baruchel or Baruchel. I would assume it's Baruchel, right?
I literally Googled that before this, and there were two different YouTube pronunciations. So I was hoping Lamar would know because we just said them both. So it's one of those.
And he is actually Canadian. So I'm wondering if maybe it's one of those things depending on your accent,
sorry,
it gets
to do that. That was Baruchel. I'm about to get fired.
Fire from what? I don't pay you.
From French Canadians,
I see.
What do you mean you don't pay me? I don't pay me either. We don't pay us. We should get paid. Sponsorship.
$200 koozies. But yeah, You recognize him from, I mean, from lots of stuff. He's in a lot of the sort of, he's in that Seth Rogen gang. So he was in like Knocked yeah. Up, and he was in This Is the End. He was sort of the main character yeah. in that one with all the celeb cameos. Mm-hmm. And then you recognize his voice, of course, from How to Train Your Dragon. Big yes. breakout role for him there.
He was also in Blackberry recently. And my favorite fun fact, actually, is that he's in the reboot of The Magic School Bus.
Oh, does he play Miss Frizzle?
I don't know.
Is it Miss Frizzle or Mrs. Frizzle? Is she married?
I think it's Miss Frizzle.
So there's no Mr. Frizzle, you're saying. There's a chance.
She's an okay. independent woman. Good She's a scientist. You know, they can't hang, you know, mm-hmm. insecure men. I'm just saying. She's
like,
no.
Humans are not monogamous creatures. Like
that does feel like something yeah. she would say, by the
she
way.
She gets on her soapbox in front of the middle schoolers. Like, you shouldn't, you know, limit yourself to one partner.
She's like, that's just not true in nature. Let me show you how. So get on the school bus.
They didn't let Miss Frizzle drive the school bus after that.
Yeah, we right. didn't see her. Cut away. Exactly. No, I have seen episodes of it, and actually it does do it the OG justice, I will say. Magic School Bus rides again. Do it.
Nice.
Do
and
it
then up. With this, you know, Jay acts in this. He wrote this film.
Yes.
He would go on to direct the sequel. But I thought it was interesting that he didn't direct this one, but apparently he was the driving force behind getting this made. This is, you know, it tells you at the beginning of this film, based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think it plays out better to not think it's based on a true story because it does seem sort of over the top. But
it does.
This is based on a book. Let me get the title right. It's called Goon.
Yep.
The True Story of an Unlikely Journey into Minor League Hockey. Not the catchiest of titles.
I literally wrote that down and I was like, this is the longest title ever. It's very, very long. But it was actually so... He, again, we're speaking to writers here. It's Jay and then also Evan Goldberg, who has written a lot of stuff that you'll know. Superbad, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, Sausage Party, The Interview. He has a very specific style, you can tell.
Offensive.
Offensive, exactly.
Offensive tackle, if you will.
It's going to come back. We're going to get a movie made, Offensive Tackle. But yeah, then it's based off the source material, which you just mentioned, but that's written by Adam Fratasio and Doug Smith, who is who this is about.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug Smith, that was his autobiography, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think what I was saying before was that it's a little unfair. I'm going to be a hypocrite here because Ooh. With Cool Runnings and with Molly's Game, I think I was critical
here
of
we go.
The historical accuracy of it. And now I'm going to be a hypocrite here and say, I don't give a shit how much of this actually happened because I think it's better to just pretend it's a fictional film. It's more fun that way. But I don't know. I'll have to read the book one day and then I'll come back and complain.
Okay, but you know what we haven't gotten into, quick nugget before I tear this down, is that Lamar and I actually did this live today. We are in real life again, mm-hmm. which we neglected to mention, but we also did this watch right before.
Is this the first time that we've watched a movie together that we then covered on a podcast?
I think so, because we talked about doing it with another that I won't mention because we might do it later. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we talked about doing it with another. It didn't work out timing-wise. But yeah, so we did like a full fucking day where we just watched the movie, we made our cocktails, we came over here and recorded. So I haven't gotten to recon any of this, which is atypical for me. So I just watched it live. This is going to be, you guys are getting a very live reaction from me at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how much of this is true. And that's normally something that I am like fucking Googling,
yeah.
doing the research. So that was my one bit of feedback of the whole movie is that there are these very high over the top moments
yeah.
that are really great storytelling. I'm not saying that, but you're also like, did that fucking happen?
Yeah, part of me wishes they didn't even bother putting based on a true. I guess they had to. It's based on
yeah.
the guy's autobiography.
I mean, it is, yeah.
But I'm sure they took a bunch of liberties here. And also, the watching together thing is, I love hanging out with you, and I had a blast today. It was also a strategic move on my part because I knew how much of a wall you had up going into this week. And I said, let me be there to like walk her through how the first 20 or 30 minutes are a little slow.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the actual team and it starts picking up. So I was like, let me nudge.
He was
McKenzie
ready to defend it
bit.
In real yeah. life. But I also don't think you had to. I feel like I went into it very open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you called me out at the end of the last ep, which is fair, totally. But I do generally, like, if I'm gonna watch it, I want to like it.
Yeah.
So I want to have a good time, I should say.
Fair.
So I tried to watch it with an open mind. And so, and also you weren't the only one. I had mentioned it to a couple people just like in passing. Mm-hmm. And they happened to have seen it, which again, of the 7 million it made, I'm shocked. But they were like, no, it's really good and you're going to like it better than I thought. So I actually didn't even notice. If you were to ask me right now, I didn't even notice that it starts kind of slow.
Yeah.
I just was kind of like taking it all in. But yeah, anyway, we'll get into that in a bit. But yeah, this was a fun, like, first watch live reaction situation for me. So I don't know. We'll get into the source material and, like, how much is true and not. That would be interesting to learn. But really quick, we're going to talk about some cast and crew stuff. So the basics, our lead here, Mr. Sean William Scott, which is actually a big part of why I never wanted to see this, to be honest. No offense. You guys know him from American Pie fame.
Mm-hmm.
He also recently, I think some of his most recent stuff that I at least recognized, I should say, was he tried to do the Lethal Weapon remake.
It was a TV series,
It was a TV series, exactly. It did not last long. Mm-hmm. It was like a one season thing, I think, or one and a half, something like that. It was like 15 episodes.
Yeah.
Something.
Turns out when you're like trying to make a TV series out of a movie series that had somebody who was anti-Semitic, it's hard to get that memory out of people's heads.
Doesn't often land.
No, this isn't associated with that guy. Don't worry.
Yeah, you know, when somebody ruins it for everybody else, mm-hmm. that's how it goes. But yeah, so I mean, like, he's so typecasted for me, you know, and he's so, like, only American Pie for me that mm-hmm. I was just like, I don't want to watch anything that this guy is in particularly. But he does do a good job here. We should just say right
now. Yeah, you mentioned Ryan Reynolds earlier, and I think him and Ryan Reynolds came up around the same time.
Yeah.
But there's some slight difference where I think maybe Sean William Scott didn't take enough variety in roles early in his career.
Yeah.
Where it just did seem like he always just played this good-looking, douchey guy. Yep. And I do like some of his work. Role Models, I think, is a really dumb but fun film with him and Paul Rudd. And I think he did some voice acting in Ice Age and things like that. But he didn't do what Ryan Reynolds did, which is be handsome and charming, but also, you know, take some risks and do it. I think this is probably my favorite role of Sean William Scott's, honestly.
I mean, of the ones that I've seen so far, which I haven't seen all of those, but yeah, this would definitely be my favorite for sure. But then we already talked about Jay, but also we have Allison Pill, who is probably most recently known for American Horror Story. She's done a lot of those.
Okay.
And then she was also in Vice, which was the, like, George Bush, Dick Cheney movie,
people
if you haven't
shot
seen
in
it.
The face, good action movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Miss Sloan, which we referenced last week, actually.
Yeah, Kelsey mentioned that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I recognize her from Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
I was getting there. Don't worry. I was definitely going to mention it. Yes, you probably also know her from that. She also is in she's in a couple Aaron Sorkins, is what I would say. Like, she did Newsroom, which is an HBO series, which is a Sorkin series.
Oh, it's not TV. It's HBO. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally different, obviously. Cable, you know, whatever. I don't know. But Newsroom was not a long-lived series, but I thought it was pretty good. And then she was in Milk. There's another one.
I saw
that.
I still haven't seen that one, honestly. But I saw her top four on IMDb, and I know that's not always
accurate,
based on popularity. Sometimes the actors get to choose. Sometimes their agents tell them which ones to put up or whatever. Sometimes it's just picked by IMDb. But I saw it was like Scott Pilgrim, Goon, Milk, and I forget what the fourth one was. It might have been Newsroom, actually.
I think it might have been Newsroom, if I recall. But yeah, I mean, she's good in all of them. She's usually, like, similar to this, where she's always somebody a little bit ancillary to the main character. And she's an interesting character this time. We'll get into that.
I love her character in this.
Do you?
We could talk more when we
I was going to say, let's
her,
get...
But
let's,
I really like Allison.
Let's dig into it, because I got feelings about her. I don't... Like, she does great, but I just, you know, her personality in this one is interesting. And then we have, oh, my fave. I love him so much. Liev Schreiber, y'all. Coming in hot. And... I do mean hot.
That facial hair, the goatee's doing it for you.
Scruff. Give me that scruff. He's so handsome. He also is so tall. One of my favorite fun factoids about him is that he is not taller than Hugh Jackman. And you may know him from X-Men fame.
Yeah.
And he's
Wolverine Origins, the best one. Everyone agrees.
Right. Yeah. But he's the antagonist in it. Yes. And they had to put Livs in Hugh Jackman's shoes because Liev Schreiber is so much taller than him.
Oh, I thought you were saying that he wasn't taller than Hugh Jackman.
No,
so you're saying he's so
Hugh Jackman is not taller than him, and he's supposed to be like the big, you know, hero guy. And
well,
so
but okay, I'm gonna nerd out on you because in like X-Men lore, like Wolverine is notoriously short. Like,
no, I know, but in film, you don't make your hero shorter than the bad guy.
That's fair.
Is what I'm saying. Yeah, so like they put lifts on Wolverine so that he could look bigger than him.
Fair.
And they like had to actually shoot them like at slightly different angles because Liev Schreiber always looked taller than Hugh Jackman.
That's what inspired like Vin Diesel on the Fast and Furious with the
Rock,
where he's like, put him like six
put
feet
him
behind
me
and we'll just make it look like we're facing each other.
100%. Yeah. So anyway, I love him. But he's also, anyway, he's bigger. He's taller than you think he is, which is why this role to me actually made a lot of sense because he's like a bit, you know, he's also a goon. So anyway, it works great for him. But you know him from, again, from X-Men, Spotlight. He's, which this is what I wanted to call out about him. He has such range. He is
looking through his history on IMDb. I am. He's underrated.
He can. I don't even think. I think he's well known, but he's just so fucking good. He has such range. He's like Spotlight. He's a newspaper editor. Ray Donovan. He's like a family man, but fucking Irish mob type of guy. Isle of Dogs. He's like hilarious and funny. He does a bunch of Wes Anderson, actually. And then fucking My Little Pony. Can we talk about how he did My Little Pony?
Idea.
He had to have done that for like his kids or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's got to be one of those like this one's for you kids.
Well, speaking of animation, he also I didn't realize he was Kingpin in the Spider-Verse, the not the newest one, but the first one. He played Kingpin. So I thought that was pretty cool.
He also has done like classic stuff like Hamlet. You
and
know
Scream
what I mean?
2.
And Scream 2.
And Scream 3.
And Scream. I love that you just compared Shakespeare and Scream. I'm fine. It's fine. I'm not upset at all.
Well, the second one has like the theater scenes that I don't know if they were doing Shakespeare.
Oh my God.
Maybe.
You're trying to trigger me and I'm not going to take the bait. So moving on. But no, he has such incredible range. He's awesome. We love him. He does a good job in this as well. And we've already talked a bunch about the plot, but I'll give you a super quick plot summary. Labeled an outcast by his brainy family, a bouncer overcomes long odds to lead a team of underperforming misfits to semi-pro hockey glory, beating the crap out of everything that stands in his way, which I felt after having seen it is a very accurate summary.
That's pretty much the whole plot.
That's the whole plot. Yeah.
I know
and
this is supposed to be the spoiler-free section, but basically you guys
that's
just the
whole plot.
The whole
thing. And I but I read that before I saw it and I had no idea. And then I watched it and I was like, yep, check.
Yeah. Well,
correct.
I mean, before we get into spoilers, I will say that I think they do a good job of adding some little subplots into the film as we go where things change and develop. We talked about Allison Pill's character. I think his relationship with his teammates and the the former assistant captain of the team is interesting. The family dynamic is interesting. So I think they add enough in there where it's not just he goes and fights and the hockey team wins. It's like I'm going to say this 8 times this episode. It's got heart.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I didn't put that in any of my notes. As you know, you saw me. I was live tweeting to myself. But I would say that's definitely true. It does have heart. What came up for me as a theme over and over about him, at least as a character, was his loyalty. I just think he's such a loyal guy. And I love that. I respect that so much. It's something I deeply identify with. And once he's a part of that team, he is a part of that team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That team is his family. He's going to protect everyone on it. And he's going to do whatever they need him to do. And he says that at one point in the movie. He's like, if my team needs me to bleed for them, I'll bleed for them. And Liev Schreiber's character, Ray, you know, steals that line. And I mean, I think it's in a respectful way. It's not a dickish way.
Right.
But I just mean he steals that line to talk about his commitment to the game for his whole career as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is very true of these guys' role. Like, that's what they're there for. They literally are there to bleed for their teams.
Yeah, it's interesting that you spoke earlier about the term goon and how it's a little off-putting for people who aren't familiar with it. And it's interesting that term in this film because it's used kind of as a pejorative term in some ways by his parents call him you're a goon, like in a really negative, critical way. And even Liev Schreiber's character says at some point, like, you know, we're goons. We don't play hockey, things like I think I might be misremembering that. But other people see it as
he says, I'm not a hockey player. He says, I'm a goon.
I'm trying to remember if there's anyone in the film who actually says goon in a positive light, like even his friend.
I don't know that Ray is saying it like in a negative way.
Yeah.
I think it's almost in a neutral way. It's just like, this is the gig.
It's my job.
Yeah. But no, it's not. I mean, again, I think it's connotated outside of this community to be a bad thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And his parents are definitely outside of this, right? Like that's why they are, you know, the way that they are. But anyway, so, I mean, again, we've established that not a ton of people saw this. Weirdly, I know a handful of people who have, but not a ton of people saw this. So before we get into spoilers, real quick, what's your rating?
I'm going to go pretty high. I think I've said before, I typically judge a movie on does it do what it's trying to accomplish. I'm not going to say this is Citizen Kane or, you know, something else that's an incredible lifelong film. But I think this is my favorite hockey movie, which it's a short list. I guess you could put Miracle up there and Slapshot and things like that. But I think for what it's trying to accomplish.
You just ignored the Mighty Ducks.
What's a Mighty Duck?
Oh, my God.
The team in Anaheim. They changed their name, by the way. But I would say this is my favorite hockey movie, and it's like a comfort watch for me. I just think it's so light and fun. It's very similar to when we covered The Replacements. It's a bunch of zany characters.
It's true.
But it's got a little more, I think, heart and soul. So, and it never fails to make me laugh. I think there are so many laugh out loud, funny moments in this, and I will laugh at them every time. And I think this could have gone a very easy route, and I'm not sure how much they changed the Doug character from the real life Doug Smith of, like, is he really this, like, kind-hearted, and are these things he said, or did they think it would make a more interesting narrative to be like, we're gonna make a sports movie about a guy that's a hockey fighter, but he's actually a real sweetheart. I think that's, it's an interesting take, and they make a lot of decisions in the writing and directing of this that I think are outside the box, and I appreciate that. So I'm gonna go as high as, for what this is trying to accomplish, I'm going to give it like an 8.5.
Wow.
Yeah. I think this is a great film.
That is high.
I don't think it's for everybody. I think if I was being objective, I'd give it like a 7.5, a 7, pretty in line with what everyone else is saying. But for me personally, I'll give it like an 8.5.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty solid. I am not a hockey person. And weirdly, I am watching hockey movies and I am reading a hockey book right now.
What book
I'm in
are you
like
reading?
The hockey zone. It's called Beartown. By Frederick Buckman.
I've heard of that. Okay.
Listen, he's an incredible author. I will plug all of his work. It's so good. And it's one of those bitter, like, it has the sweet and the heart and all the things. Anyway, so I can see, honestly, the narrative that I've been reading about, the love of hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why people love it. Because, I'm not a hockey person. And then you see it in this film as well, like, why these people love it. And they find, you know, real heart in it as well. So I agree. First of all, again, eating my words, it was so much better than I thought. But as far as like my type of humor, I did think it was very funny. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's not funny. But there were plenty of times where I was looking at you and Skylar and y'all were laughing. And I was like, this is not that funny. But there are definitely lots of funny parts. I'm not saying that. But I would say I'm more in line with, I think, maybe most people. I would give it like a 7. Yeah.
Do you think when you, without spoiling anything, was the humor difference, do you think that was male-female humor, or do you think, because 100%. I noticed that watching with you sitting, you know, two seats 100%. Across me, I was like, oh.
It's two bros laughing at bro jokes and a woman being like, this is not that funny.
Yeah, it was very, there was something you said, oh, when we watched The Replacements, and they used that line of, this is why women don't play the game, coach. Oh, there's some lines in here where it's just
there's
like,
some lines that don't hold up, and we will get to them.
Yes.
But I, again, I do think it's a funny film. I'm not saying that, but there are jokes that, don't land for me.
Fair.
For sure. Okay. So as usual, turn around, don't drown. It is spoiler time.
Here we go.
So again, we'll say at the top, I wasn't expecting much. That's in my notes. I'm not expecting much. That's literally
that's
how
the first
I,
thing you
that's
typed.
The first
I'm
thing I wrote out.
Much.
But I immediately got excited because he's a Massachusetts bouncer, and I love me some New England and some mass holes. And I was like, here we go. My people, even though I'm not from there at all, whatever. But yeah, so I was like, super excited to see him. They establish early on, he's kind of a doofus. He's just this basic bouncer guy. And he's totally outnumbered by this brainy family, again, called out in the summary. Mm-hmm. And man, his family sucks. I mean, his brother's great. His parents suck.
Yeah, they have high expectations. And I guess we don't really need an explanation of why he's different. He's just sort of the black sheep.
Yeah.
And yeah, they establish early on that they're...
He's different because he's not smart.
Yes,
like, that's what it is.
That is. Yeah, he points it out later in the film. And I found it interesting. I didn't pick up on it until this time around that when they first come out of the church and he's making jokes.
He's being cute and sweet. Charismatic.
Another couple comes over to his family and the parents introduce themselves, or maybe it's the friend introduces
the
parents and the other son.
But they don't know him.
Don't introduce, and he's like, oh, this is my other
son. And then his dad does step in, I will say,
okay.
And he just says youngest. He doesn't like say anything particularly negative.
Right.
But you can tell there's like a delay and why are we not talking about this guy? You also had the setup at the door where like he's making jokes and people don't think he's funny or whatever. So you can tell like something's slightly off. But then the couple asks him, what Ivy League school did you go to, Doug? And like, you can clearly tell that's not him already. He hasn't said anything particularly stupid, but like, you can tell that's just not his vibe. And you see his parents like immediately react with some level of shame.
Yeah.
And it's gross. Like, they're just embarrassed by him immediately. And then their son, who is smart and has obviously gone to an Ivy League school or whatever, is gay. And that's totally fucking fine. And they're slightly ashamed of that as well.
Right.
And they're pretending like that he's not gay. Mm-hmm. He literally says as he's running, his son is running up to his boyfriend and hugging him and kissing him and grabbing his ass. And his dad is like, they're just really good friends. Are you fucking kidding me?
And then he pivots to what? Do you remember what he says after that? When Doug's chasing his hat, he says, oh, they're both adopted. Which is played
that's
as
right.
a joke.
No, no, no. It's
but when
not
you're
funny.
Talking about a dumb son.
And a gay guy.
Like, if this was it is a straight comedy. If you're just, if it's like, oh, that's my clumsy son. And it's like, he's adopted. That would play as a pretty funny joke of like chasing his yarmulke. But then when it's like the other son is a homosexual and it's like, they're both adopted. It's like, wait, why do you want to disown the, that's.
I have so many comments on that
Eugene
scene.
Levy.
One, yarmulkes are really hard to attach to your head when you don't have a lot of hair. So like, I feel for the guy. He is a buzz cut, basically. Like, how is he supposed to keep this on? The wind blowing it away is totally normal. Don't make fun of the guy. Secondarily, the gay guy running up to his boyfriend and like kissing him and greeting him, they played that really over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought it was totally fine for obviously them to kiss and greet each other, of course, but they played it over the top. And that is something that happens in this movie a few times with regard to gay stuff that I don't like, where they're like, they're making it a caricature of a gay man instead of it just being a gay guy and his boyfriend and like making it normal. And then, that guy has a joke about, you know, they're both adopted. And it's just not funny. Like, it's not funny at that moment. His parents seemingly suck. They're not proud of their kids. And they're not proud of just, like, who their kids are, you know? They're very much, you can tell, about accomplishments and resumes and whatever, and we don't like that. And so, it sets up this thing of this guy is a really nice, sweet guy, as we find later, in spite of it all.
It's also a product, I think, of...
Of the time.
It's interesting how quickly social norms shift. And it's not to say that anything was ever okay, but when you look at comedies from 20, 30 years ago, and I mean, we're not going to talk about it, but I was going to reference Slapshot today, which is an all-time classic hockey movie that I know a lot of people love. And that one...
Literally never heard of it until today.
It's, God, I wish I'd looked up the actor's name. It's a super famous actor that you would know. He's
I'm
been
sure,
in a shit ton
yeah.
of stuff. But it's a hockey movie, and in that, the homophobic slurs in that, I watched
are really
it and
bad.
Was like cringing. But it's like, that's from, I think, the 70s or something like that. And then you go to films in the 2000s and you're watching Bring It On. And there's this very casual homophobia. And then you go, you think 2011's not that long
it's
ago.
It's not that fucking long ago.
But this was still being played as an acceptable joke. And even though it's not as hateful and mean-spirited, it's still like, wait, what did he say? That's
but
a little...
they say, I will say, and we'll wrap this up and get into the good stuff. But I will say, they... say the anti-gay F word repeatedly. Mm. And to me, I'm like, I don't remember that being okay even then, even 10-ish years ago, 13 years ago. Like, that's gross. It's been gross. It's been gross for a long time. Like, stop using that word. And they use it kind of willy-nilly to me. You know, I don't love that at all.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I heard it 3 times and it was all in the one scene. Yeah?
No, they say it in the hockey scene and then they say it during a fight scene later, I think. I think there's at least one other time in a bar also, maybe.
Okay, I'd be curious to rewatch. I
feel like I felt it happen a few times, and maybe I'm also referring to the bar scene where they say a lot of, they don't say the F word a lot, but I thought I heard it at least once, where the guys on their team are asking to see his dick.
So I think that for the most part, after that initial scene, my theory here, and this is why what I wanted to get into with the different stories that run through this and making sort of outside the box decisions. And I guess you could say that this is kind of being played for sympathy of, oh, let's give this sweetheart hockey fighter guy a gay brother who he feels the need to defend and speak up for. And it makes him, you know, more likable and heroic.
No,
in the
I
movie.
Love
so
that
part
of
the narrative.
No, I love that part.
But they use the F word in that the hockey for the initial where the hockey player comes up into the stands and he hits him because he's like, my brother's gay. Stop saying that word. That's what I remember. I feel like throughout the rest of the film, anytime they use the term gay, it's being used in the literal sense of the word of like, if you are, you know, touching another man's penis, that would be by definition gay. Like, I think that they're using it in the proper sense of the term.
I generally agree. I think sometimes it's, yes, it is like descriptive in that this person is gay. But there was at least one other time where it's like, you're being kind of gay. Like, that's maybe a bad thing. And it's like, of course it's not. But you're totally right. It tees him up to be a really good dude and him be able to defend the gayness being fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he says, even my gay brother doesn't do that thing you're asking me to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. But even all that to say, they might be sort of playing that up to make him a more likable character. But I did want to pivot back to what you said earlier, which is that for as much as they do that, well for the most part, I would argue. They don't do it great when it comes to females and the sexism in this, because anytime there's reference to a woman in this or a woman's anatomy, it's used in a very mean way.
It's not great.
Yeah.
I have multiple notes about it. One of which was after they lose a game that they were very close to winning or whatever. And he's like, whatever you guys, like, whenever you guys decided to start ovulating, like, get it together. And I was like, fuck you very much. Ovulation is a superpower. It's literally why women can have children and create life. And I am not a mom, by the way, so I'm not, like, defending my own capabilities here. I'm saying, like, that fundamentally is a ridiculous thing to say. As well as I hate calling people a pussy. We have talked about this, I think, maybe on the pod, but definitely off the pod.
Yeah.
Pussies are strong, man. That is some bullshit. I get you. Your nether regions are much weaker than a woman's, is what I would say.
I've, like, been hitting my nether regions. It's not, not
it's pleasant. Not great. I'm just saying, like, you know, it's not, it's just a shitty insult. We're, you know.
And I think if I had to push a baby, we don't have to get super specific, but if I had to push a baby out of my nether regions, no, it wouldn't
snap go
up. Back.
Would not step back.
It'd probably ruin my life.
But no. Yeah, we'll get all the negative out of the way. They don't handle gay stuff perfect in this film. It could be better. And then they definitely have very misogynistic moments. Like, even the way women are depicted in this film is not great, right? They're very ancillary to the story. They're referred to in negative ways. And even Allison Peel's name. Allison Peel's character. She is not well presented because she likes him but has a boyfriend. And I have, you know, mixed feelings about that. Like, I get it. You can meet someone that you like while you're in a relationship. I'm not saying that. It's just how she handles it going forward that, to me, is a bit problematic. But you end up liking her, but I think you have to, at least for me, have to work through that.
I personally disagree. I really like the Ava character because it's so different. I think it would be easy and lazy to have. I mean, first of all, okay, let me formulate my thoughts here, because I think it's difficult to work a female character into a sports movie where it's a male sport, because they're always going to be, you know, we talked about the replacements of, like, you have the cheerleader on the sideline and that's who Falco's talking to. Mm-hmm. And they do their best at involving. So to get a female character, and I'm not saying you have to force a female character, you could just have it be a movie about a guy joining a hockey team, but they want to force sort of a romance story into this. But I like that they took her character and did something, again, outside the box of having her be a little more complex. She's not just this cute girl he runs into in town and spends the whole movie trying to impress, who is just, oh, you're so cute and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, she has her own life and shit going on. And I like that she, I guess I want you to speak to her sort of owning her sexuality and saying,
that part's
I cheat. Yeah. I'm kind of a slut. Like, she seems upset about it. Like,
it's the cheat part I have a problem with. Like, be a slut. I love a slut. Have fun. You know what I mean? Like, I love that she's owning her sexuality, like you said. I do like that she's a little bit complicated. I think there's nothing wrong with that. There's also nothing wrong with her having met this man again that she likes while she's in a relationship. Like, life is not black and white. Cheating is not black and white. There are reasons these things happen. I'm not saying that. But I do think the way she continually, quote unquote, struggles with it. I mean, you heard me live. I was going, why are you with him? Break up with him. Yeah. You don't want to be with him anymore because you are enamored by this other guy.
Yeah.
That was my problem with it. It's like, if you know yourself and all these other aspects of yourself that you're willing to own, your quote unquote, I'm a horny girl, I like to sleep around. If you own all of that, great, fabulous. Own the fact that you don't want to be in a relationship with this guy then.
Right.
And that was, to me, the disparity of, like, why does there have to be this specific conflict of I'm going to cheat on my boyfriend instead of just breaking up with my boyfriend that I'm clearly not in love with because I'm obsessing over this other guy. And I don't see why she is tethered to that person if she is this complex, you know, person who wants to play the field. Just play the field. This is my thing with all cheaters ever. There's no reason why you have, no one's making you be in that relationship. Just play the field. Be a hoe. I don't give a shit. But just don't fuck somebody over in the process. Like, we know nothing about this guy. I don't care any, you know, two iotas about this guy. But just, like, don't be that kind of person. I think it takes away from the likability of her as a character because she has all this self-awareness but then does this thing. And so I just had a problem with that. I don't have a problem with her owning any of that other stuff. I don't even have a problem with them having the bond that they have. I don't have a problem with him winning her over. I think that's all beautiful. I just wish she would pull the trigger more quickly.
Yeah, I think that at its core, it's probably the efforts of the writers to take two
to stereotypes. Create conflict. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say to take two stereotypes of a bouncer who's going to join a hockey league and be a fighter, and then this small town girl who just lives in the town and is kind of a fan of the hockey team and the guys there. I think you could use the stereotypical versions of them, but I think they thought it would be fun to flip it on its hat, on its head, have her be more of not the aggressor, but the more game one, where he's sort of just like the, like, I want to woo you and things like that. Yeah. But
it's, and he's so gentle and polite about it. Like, asterisk, just add on to what you just said. He's so sweet.
When she, like, tells him she has a boyfriend, he just walks away and he's upset. But
he's heartbroken, the poor guy, but he handles it great. But yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that that's probably a decision on the writing team's part. I think it also leads to that final moment. And I think the hurtful thing is that this implies that she's like a serial cheater, that she's been cheating on guy for a while, which again, yeah, you said, doesn't make her super likable. I think it leads up to, though, that final, not final line, but the moment where she says, you make me want to stop sleeping with a bunch of guys. Like, that seems inherently sweet because of what we know about her character.
In her context, it's definitely a sweet thing for her to say. It's maybe not the best thing for a person to say, but, well, and I don't even mean that. It's, again, if she were single, that wouldn't even be a problematic thing to say either. Mm-hmm. Like, it's great that you have met this guy that finally makes you want to, you know, commit to that relationship. Or, you know, again, if you're a polyamorous person, like, you do you, boo. But again, it's just about being open about it and being straightforward with you and yourself. But I do come to like her over the course of this. I don't, again, mean to disparage her too much. I just, that one tiny aspect of it I didn't love. But I do think, from a storytelling standpoint, does add to, you know, a good conflict point in the film. And it makes their little love story not happen just overnight either. You know, they get this kind of little bit of a drawn out part of like, to your point, another drawn out subplot during this whole other thing. So I get why it happens in the film. For sure.
Speaking of subplots, that's a great segue, because that's one thing that I had written down, and I mentioned this earlier on, was, again, this would be an easy paint by number film. But I think what I like about this is they do such a good job of interweaving these other little subplots that are not, you know, major plot points, but they add to the heart of the film. I think the Ava storyline is a good one. I think the relationship between Doug and Xavier is a good one throughout the film, where they
sort of
butt heads early on. They have, you know, he gets his assistant captain spot. There's a lot of conflict. There's the scene where Xavier actually hits him in the face, and he has that moment where he's like, I could kill you right now, but I'm not going to.
Because you're on my team. Mm-hmm. And I have this note over and over in my notes, and about multiple people, but especially him. The loyalty.
Yeah.
I love the loyalty of it all. I love the loyalty of him. If he's like, I'm not going to strike the guy on my team. That's my teammate. That's who I'm supposed to protect. And I could fuck you up and I could not back you up. And you will see how that goes. Mm-hmm. And it's not just him. Again, I have I have loyalty notes about his best friend. His best friend is purposely obnoxious, as we talked about live and in person. He's not my vibe. But what I love and respect about him is how much he loves his best friend. And they love each other.
Up, yeah.
And they back each other up, and he brings his family to see them. You can tell that he's the impetus for that, right? Like, he has dragged them there to watch him, support him. That's some best friend love, and I love that for both of them. And his brother. His brother loves him, is proud of him no matter what. So there's a lot of these themes of loyalty throughout that I really, really love. And I love that him and LaFlamme's relationship evolves in that way, but it comes at the price of this really brutal moment in the film that you had to actually explain to me, because I sort of missed it, was, you know, he's obviously supposed to be protecting these guys. He's, again, the muscle for the team, blah, blah, blah. LaFlamme has had this horrible injury previously, which is what has kind of caused his downfall as a player. He's so scared now. He won't admit that, but he's very scared. And Glatt is here to protect him. He's like, I'm going to protect you no matter what. But then they have that confrontation. And he decides then and there to not fight him, but to stop protecting him.
Yep.
And so in that scene hits so different, knowing that he gets hit again. He gets hit again pretty hard, but it's because Glatt chose to kind of step aside.
Yeah. He let the guy get
through. He let the guy get through, and he could have stopped him. And I thought it was an innocent mistake. Like, he was distracted, the gameplay, you know, all the things that just happen in a game. And it's not. It was a conscious choice. Mm-hmm. But then he sees him get hit, and he's immediately riddled with guilt.
Yeah.
And he goes and beats the living shit out of the guy.
And I thought that, I mean, we can talk, we've talked about how Sean William Scott is kind of typecast and maybe doesn't pick the best roles. But I thought that moment where he is, like, lost and, like, gets up like a uncaged animal, and he's covered in the blood, and he just gives these like grunt noises, like he's coming out of like a blackout moment.
I think he blacked out. 100%. I agree. I think he blacked out in like, I didn't expect him to really get hurt. Mm-hmm. And now that he did, like, this was my job to protect this person. Right. I don't think he ever had the real intent of truly letting him get hurt. I think he thought like, oh, he'll get bonked, you know, a little by this guy.
Just but a little bonk, bonk.
Just a little bonk. Teach this kid a lesson, right? But then he realizes he could have really hurt this guy because I wasn't there to protect him. And he feels this deep, deep guilt. And yeah, he comes out of that in a daze for sure. Mm-hmm. And he is. He's covered in blood. And you can tell he just feels this very deep guilt. And it's the one moment, I shouldn't say that it's not likable. It's the one, like, impure moment of his, maybe.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way, because up to now he's been so pure to almost unrealistic levels, right?
Yeah.
Like, of just, he's so one team, one dream, like I will take anything for this team. Mm. In the way that he talks both on and off the ice, right? Like, this is just who this guy is.
Yeah.
And I think this is the one impure but human moment for him,
right,
where he makes a little mistake and he immediately regrets it, and he kind of goes back to like, this is not who I am, yeah, you know? And I think it's good that we see that, because I think otherwise he'd be like a little too perfect.
Yeah, too over the top. I could definitely see that. I think that's a pretty good analysis of sort of their dynamic. I wrote down that I don't know if this was in the script or if it was the director's decision, but there's really good work in this as far as some sort of recurring shots and visuals. I love the use of the logo throughout. So when,
yes,
you're talking about Xavier and his relationship, you know, in the beginning, everyone's walking over the logo.
Mm-hmm.
Then Doug joins. He doesn't. At some point, Xavier spits on the logo. Doug
wipes it up.
And then at the end, you get the moment of like both of them, you know,
walking around
the logo. And it's such a simple sports thing. There's that. I love the shot throughout of his fist hitting the ice to pick himself back up.
Yeah.
And they use that, I think, 3 or 4 times, including the final fight. I just think there's little,
yeah,
things that they do really well from a directorial perspective.
Totally. And I think that the symbolism, like you said, it's such a simple sports thing. I don't think it's simple. There is such symbolism in sports. That's why we love sports. Like, I love sports also. I'm not a hockey person, but I am a sports person. Like, sports can really tug at your heartstrings.
Yeah.
It puts you through this emotional roller coaster and this investment in your team. And even as just, you know, an observer. And you see how much respect he has for team, for what a team is. And that becomes pervasive. And I like that in the summary too, where they say he leads his team to success, you know, because he does. He leads by example, and it's almost by accident. But it is this deep reverence and respect for what this team is and what this sport is. And he permeates that across the team, I think. And then, yeah, you see LaFlamme adopted as well, and start to love his team and respect his team as well, and get over kind of his "I'm better than all of you" bullshit,
right,
and get back to the like, this is my team, this is the hockey that I love,
mm-hmm,
and now that I have this guy that I trust, I can play. I can play,
yeah,
that I want to play and that I'm capable to play, and you see him get better and better as a result.
Yeah, the final scene, we have the big fight, and I always forget when I'm rewatching how the last game plays out. It's like, obviously, him and Ross have to fight. That's sort of the whole concept. But hockey is not, winners or losers are not decided by the fights, right? It's the scoreboard. So
yeah.
I always forget that they're down 2-0 when the fight scene happens. He goes to the locker room, doesn't play the rest of the game. But then LaFlamme steps up and has
wins.
A natural hat trick, 3 goals in a row to win the game for them. And that's,
yeah,
it's weird that we don't focus as much on that, but they intercut that with him in the locker room with Ava. So he's won his battle. LaFlemme's won his battle.
Right.
The team's won, which is great.
And they've done it together. Like, it
mm-hmm.
is very, even though he's separate, which is hard to see, I think. It's a conscious choice, but it's hard to see that he
yeah.
doesn't get to be there for that. It still feels, because of the way they shot it as well,
mm-hmm.
that this is something they did as a team, that they did this together. And it is credited to him as much as LaFlamme, who's scoring the goals. You
yeah.
know what I mean? And that's, I think, beautiful. And also, even he's being respected in that moment by Ross as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has that smirk. He comes out of, he's knocked unconscious, literally. So he definitely won.
Yeah.
But he comes out of that smirking.
Yeah.
Like, almost like this. And you tell me if you read it this way, but just this, like, all right, I can pass the baton to this guy.
Like, he got me.
He got me. Right. Like, I respect you. He'd already said earlier that he respects him, but they hadn't come head to head yet. Right.
Yeah.
And now it feels like he extra respects him and is like, look, I can pass the mantle to you. Like, you are the next Ross Ray, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. So for those who are listening to this who have seen Goon, but who might not have seen the sequel, I was telling Mackenzie and Skylar earlier, it's not as good. Obviously, difficult to do comedy sequels. If I gave this an 8.5, I would give Goon 2 like a 6, 6.5. But I think it's worth watching if you really like this first one. And I just want to say that the dynamic, because Ross is also in the second one, and even in this one, he says he's going to retire. I think they do a good job of weaving their two storylines back together. And that moment that you're talking about of, I respect you, I appreciate you, I'm passing the baton, plays out in the second one as well, plot-wise.
Interesting.
I want to tie that into a little more discussion on their dynamic, because I think the diner scene of the two of them talking together, and it's just this sort of, again, mutual respect, admiration, but it's tinged with Liev Schreiber's incredible delivery of like his dialogue in that scene.
But it's also so simple and subtle. It's like a very chill scene. They're literally, all that's happening is you're watching two guys have a conversation. You know, there's no effect to this. There's no battle to this.
Yeah.
This has been a very action heavy film to this point, and that's not what's happening here. But it is, again, to your point, his delivery is incredible, but also so is Sean William Scott's. Like, this is where I will give him credit. Like, I don't think he's the most incredible actor, but I think he played this very well. And his character is teaching Ross as well. And you see Ross have that these moments in this conversation of realization of like, he might be the real deal, because he, again, takes this team part seriously and he believes himself to be a hockey player. You know, even Ross is like kind of razzing, like, we're not really hockey players. We're goons, like we said. But, you know, but Glatt defends himself and is like, no, I'm a hockey player, man.
He's expecting Doug to like roll over and take his way of thinking. He's that line of everyone loves their soldiers until they come home. Like, there's some interesting dialogue in this scene, like really well written. But Doug just is, he has his beliefs and he sticks to them.
And that's the thing that you like about him, because even though he's very likable, he's really not confrontational off the ice. He still knows who he is. And he has a value system that he sticks to very deeply. And even though this is a guy that he obviously respects and admires as well, to your point, he doesn't just lay down and agree with him. He says, like, no, like, we're players, man. Like, this is our team as much as it's theirs, and we're hockey players. And I love that moment of, like, you see Ross. Ross doesn't back down either.
Right.
But you see him almost remembering that, if that makes sense.
A little bit of disbelief, but also, oh, I remember when I loved
this game. I remember when I loved this way, and I remember when I felt this way, too.
Yeah.
And maybe realizing more than he probably has up to this point that, like, maybe my time has come, because I don't have this same energy anymore to feel this way about it. But I love that this guy does.
Yeah. I think they have that scene. I love the final line where he says, you have my respect, whatever it's worth to you, you have my respect. But at the end of the day, if it comes down to me and you on the ice, it's like, I will lay you the fuck out. And that delivery by Schreiber in a Canadian accent, no less, is fantastic.
It is fantastic, because it's not even, it's not conflict oriented. He's not picking a fight. He's just like laying the groundwork of, if it comes to you versus me on the ice, like, it's going to be me. You know what I mean? And of course, he ends up being proven wrong. And I think that's what he respects about it. Is that he does get laid out by him, and he's like, you know what?
You got me.
Exactly. and you know, and I love the last, like, it is this big poetic moment. It's this big climactic moment. But it does end on a moment of levity where the last line is like, I think I nailed him.
I don't know. I blacked out, but I think he's unconscious.
I think he's fucking done. And it's beautiful because it's like, he's not 100% certain. But he's also just like, I think I did it, you know, and he's like kind of proud, and you can tell he's happy no matter what.
Yes.
He knows he did the best that he could, and that hopefully his team goes out there and wins as a result. And he's just happy that he did what he could.
Facts. And I wanted to point this out, and I find this strange because I didn't pick up on it in my first watch. The very beginning of the film, They open with a fight between Ross and, fun fact, actual former NHL player George LaRock. He's the tall guy with the dreadlocks
fights
both of the main characters, basically, throughout the film.
They have these very polite fights.
Yes.
I love Glatt's comment earlier. He's like, he's a nice guy.
So apparently that was based on a real-life fight. So this guy played in the NHL. Okay. He was kind of an enforcer type. And they had him mic'd up for a game, like with a microphone while he played.
Oh, and
he
so said he
something
said
similar.
That.
He's like, do you want to go? Yeah, sure. Okay, good luck.
I think they know their role. You know what I mean? Like, they're not here to be dicks about it. I actually love that. I mean, I don't watch hockey, but you see that in baseball a lot. You know, they're fucking chatting it up at the bases. If you're on base and you're next to the first baseman, you're having a chat.
Yeah.
And I love when they mic them up and they're like the camaraderie of it all. But when the fucking game starts again, I'm going to try and steal second. Like, you can fuck off. You know what I mean? I love that energy of, like, we got game mode and we got people mode.
I agree with that, because I think when you're standing on, like, first base and talking to the other guy, it's like, hey, how's your $3 million you're getting to be here? Good.
Right.
Me too.
Right.
Okay, now we're back into fight.
Everybody's fucking happy to be there.
We're doing okay. We're playing a sport and getting paid for it. But I wanted to point out that at the beginning, they open with that fight between Ray and, I forget what the character's name is, but it's George LaRock. And Ray kind of knocks him down, and then you see this shot of the tooth falling in the blood, which is actually the final shot of the film.
Yeah.
And then you hear Doug say, I think I nailed him, in that opening scene.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up until like my third or fourth watch, and I didn't know if you picked it up since we were watching with subtitles. They're having Doug say that line when you haven't even met Doug yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he says it as the I thought that was strange.
I feel like subtitles helped me out here, because I don't know that I would have noticed it the first time, but I did. If I hadn't had subtitles, but I did notice it. And then you do notice at the end that it is the same shot, for sure.
And I just thought
and
that
then
was
they
a
wait
weird
for the tooth to fall, though. I don't know if you noticed this, until the second shot.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not until you get to the very end that you get to see the tooth fall. And I remember I turned to you and Skylar and I was like, it's not hockey if a tooth hasn't gone flying. So.
A lot of teeth apparently get knocked out. And so I think Doug loses a tooth, Ray loses
a
tooth.
There's a lot of teeth.
Somebody mentions three people's teeth getting knocked out. So there's a lot of teeth getting lost in hockey.
Which I do feel like is a hockey thing. But also, I mean, I don't know a ton about hockey. I would just not argue that I do that do at all. But I have been to two or three hockey games in my life. And one of them, they definitely, like, a guy lost, like, two or three teeth.
Oh.
So, I mean, I think it is kind of.
It's pretty common, and it's weird. Like, I know some people wear cages over their full face, but some people think about tradition, and they just want to play with the visor. Some people don't want the visor at all. They just want the helmet. So it's a risk you take playing out there, for sure. I was going to ask you, as someone who doesn't watch a ton of hockey, how did you take that when you're watching the actual game being played in this film? Is it easy to follow? Does it make sense? Are there things like, did they make it easy
to track? Yes and no. I feel like they did an okay job of making it easy to track. I also don't know, like, I don't know nothing about hockey, but I just don't know a lot about hockey. So I feel like I knew some stuff that helped me, but there's a lot implied, I will say.
Yeah.
I don't think that you, like, even the penalties, like, I know some of that, and I think I would have been confused.
Yeah.
And I did remember, I said out loud to y'all, where they had, he draws him, Ross Ray draws him into a penalty. They don't actually fight, but he draws him into a penalty, and he gets sent to the penalty box. And that was something that I learned here, where I was like, he gets put in the penalty box, they didn't even fight. I thought they only got put in the box if they fought. And that was something that was new for me. But same kind of thing, I think, like, if you don't know the game at all, you're going to be a little confused. But I don't think it's the point of the story anyway. So
that was going to be sort of what I was getting at, because I think with sports movies, you always, and this goes back to what you said at the beginning of, I don't think I would have watched this because, A, it's a hockey movie and it's about, like, a fight thing, and I don't like the, there's multiple reasons, but I feel like, is it off-putting for people who go into this thinking it's going to be a quote-unquote hockey movie? If you don't know anything about hockey, that's not what it's about. And it's sort of like, would you watch The Replacements if you weren't a football fan? Would you watch Miracle if you weren't a hockey fan? Would you
I think it's all about how it's built.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like we talked about earlier. I think it depends on how it's marketed. Like, I'll watch just about anything if it looks like it's well done.
Right.
You know, I've watched other hockey movies. I mean, not a ton, but, like, I mean, I joke about the Mighty Ducks. Everybody's seen the Mighty Ducks. But, I mean, I've seen Miracle and, like, you know, a couple of those other ones that are famous. But I think what happens just by virtue of them being more popular sports is that you can draw people in to a football movie or to a baseball movie just more easily. And I do think it, you probably have to present hockey a very specific type of way to get people to watch it.
Yeah, I think this one does a good job of not over-explaining everything to more casual viewers, but still making it so that folks who are fans of hockey understand everything that's going on, but not going
so far. Yeah, I guess
so
that would be my question to you is, like, as a fan, is it too boring? Or is
It plays like a real thing. It's a little unbelievable in some cases, but for the most part, it's like the penalties are accurate. Everything that's the gameplay is accurate. The actual stuff.
So that penalty thing that I was talking about, that would have happened.
Yeah, if you try to instigate a fight and the other person doesn't want to fight you, like you drop your gloves, that is a penalty.
Okay.
And I don't know how often it happens, but somebody baits somebody into doing it like they do in the film.
Then that would be.
But if I'm like, let's fucking go, and I drop my gloves and go at you, but you aren't trying to fight, they will put me in a box.
They'll put you because you instigated it. Yeah. I mean, that's totally makes sense. It just wasn't something that I expected. So interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was easy to follow. I thought the on ice work was really good. I didn't, from a camera perspective, watching the
it
shots
was
of,
shot very well. Yeah, very
this
well.
This is not
and
Mighty
liked,
Ducks, and I love Mighty Ducks, but this looks like
Mighty Ducks is
game.
Adorable. This is a little different in that it's like it feels like it's really trying to capture the play, but again, to your point, not over explain it. And you see these really intense moments of like when he blocks the goal with his fucking mouth and when he gets hit in the teeth and he's getting hit with the hockey stick because he's still blocking the goal over and over. And he's literally horizontal and he's like, I will block this goal. And then they're cutting his ankles, which are already apparently bad with their blades. And like the way all of that is shot is like, you are tense. You are enraptured by this and you're seeing it up close. Yeah, your teeth are clenched. I was stressed. I was like leaning. I was like, you know, I was stressed about it. And then you also see it later, of course, when they have their big knockdown drag out fight, literally. And you see his ankle, you know, bend and you like, I mean, he is fighting on a broken fucking ankle. And but he's still going and he's waiting for his shot. That's the other thing that I really like about that scene is you're thinking, God, he's just taking this fucking beating. But you also kind of know, like, he's gonna do something. And he's doing the thing that they, I don't know if you remember this, they like had a call to it earlier of Ross Ray's move is he brings you in, he lets you get close, he lets you get some hits in, and then he uppercuts you and he like, he gets you really good, but he baited you in. And you see Glatt do that to him.
Yeah.
Of like, you got me, and his ankle's fucked, and you know Ross thinks he's got him. But he does it to him where he just waits for the moment and he literally locks him.
I think he switches hands. Yeah, because he's
hands.
On his back.
He
foot.
Lefties
yeah.
him. Yeah. He southpaws him. And like, so he does not expect it because he has shifted his position. Mm-hmm. And you can tell, again, Ross thinks he's got him, thinks he's falling practically. And for which in the context, you totally would think he's got his ankles fucked. Like, of course you've got him. Yeah. And then he just lays him out. And I love that he turns that move on him. It's also like a real poetic moment.
Yeah, everything comes full circle. And I will say this, if there are people out there like, this isn't what real fighting looks like. Well, there's Rocky movies too, and that's not what boxing. We're not watching this because it's accurate to fight.
No,
we're watching because it's fun.
This is a movie.
I wanted to touch on, because you had mentioned his loyalty to his teammates, and we've touched on all the other dynamics in this film, but what did you think of the cast of teammates? Sort of similar to The Replacements,
oh my
a bunch
God.
Of random fucking characters.
I thought your call out at the top was 100% accurate. This is very, and I hadn't thought about that before because, again, I just watched it. But no, I think that's super accurate. It's a very similar arrangement of misfits. And again, I think like league play, just so, for context for people who haven't seen it, or maybe you have seen it but didn't catch this. Like there is the NHL and then there are the lower leagues, much like baseball. There's MLB and then there's AAA, right? So like you have these farm teams that can get sent up or sent down players, right? And so LaFlamme has been sent down from the NHL and he's kind of disgraced by this. That's why he's so bitter and angry and blah, blah, blah. And so these guys are all a hot mix of people who like
aren't good enough to
aren't
get
good
there,
enough,
are too old and like
are too old. Like some of them have maybe been there before and
went through
also
a divorce
sent down,
or currently or, going or we're playing divorce guys.
They're divorce guys. We're playing divorce guys. That's such a funny fucking speech, I will say. But yeah, so it's like it's a band of misfits. It's some people who are a little too old, some younger folks who are not good enough, but they're there to pay the bills, like the quote unquote Asian player. That was another
way
joke.
Medical school.
That was another joke that wasn't great. But still, like it's a band of misfits, totally. Yeah. And it's kind of cute. And they do all have their own character. And again, I think the thing about Glatt that's great is he, like Falco in The Replacement, brings them all together.
Embraces all of them.
Embraces all of them and makes them a team. And he doesn't judge any of them. He was a bouncer 20 minutes ago. He doesn't give a fuck.
Did you have a favorite standout? I have a guess of who you liked the most, but is there a player from the team that stood out the most to you?
I mean, I like the divorce guy. What's his name? Ogilvy or something? He had a weird last name. Yeah. He was fucking hilarious.
Yes.
He's a drunk the whole time. but he's like drunk dialing his ex-wife or the wife he's divorcing or whatever. He's hilarious. He gives this horrible but funny speech. And then he pulls it out at that last game. You know, he gives an actually good speech.
And he's wearing the C the whole, he's the captain.
And he's the captain. Why is he the captain? That is the question the whole
seniority.
Time. But yes, he is the old guy who is there to teach all these youngins what to do. And that's why he's the captain. But man, he's fucking funny. And then his last speech is one, very good, but still brings up the divorced shit in it. And I just think that's so funny because it turns and you think it's going to be a shitty speech again because of that. But then it turns into like, oh, it's actually a good one.
This is my family.
He did great. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's cute. I like him a lot.
I thought you were going to go with Steve Z, his little hype, because you kept saying, oh, his little hype man.
That. You're right. No, you might be right. It might be Steve Z. His hype man. I do have that in my notes 27 times. The fucking hype man, dude. He's just behind him, echoing everything he says on and off the ice, in the locker room, in the bar. Yeah. He's just there to fucking build this guy up. It's adorable.
When
that's
that
true.
Puck drops, we all drop. And it's like, what the fuck does that mean? Nobody, shut the fuck up.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
But yes, I love him.
And
he's
I love his line where he's talking about, like, again, in proper context, the term gay porn. He says gay porn. He's like, you are all Adonises. That line gets me every time.
Yeah.
It's so true. You're all Adonises, which is, you know, maybe a Chippendales Adonis reference, by the way. But anyway, it was hilarious. I agree. I think he's so funny.
Yeah, I love the goalie. I think he's very funny. He's from Regina. And his first line of, two fucking rules, man. Don't touch my Percocets. And do you have
any Percocets? I do love that. And I love later the callback to that from Glatt, who he's like, you know, he's been injured. He's been beat to hell for unrelated reasons. And he's on painkillers. And he's like, I'm high as fuck on painkillers. Chill, guys. And the guy's like, hey,
Pass the douchey.
And he's like, I will. I got some for you.
No, don't worry.
He's immediately like, of course I did.
Apologetic.
Obviously, I will bring you some. But yeah, no, I also like that he like slowly gets better. Same thing. Again, this guy has led them all to be better at everything that they do. And he at the beginning couldn't block a fucking puck to save his life. And now he's like a really good goalie. And so anyway, you love to see it, the progression of all these characters. So yeah, I definitely think it has a lot of heart, a lot of storytelling. Again, I think some of the like bro humor doesn't land for me personally, but it is a funny film.
That was going to be the last thing that I wanted really to touch on was sort of the comedy in it. It is a very funny film, and the stuff that does land and sort of is not for everyone appropriate, the stuff that kills me, we've talked about a couple of them, but I think my favorite might be the shitty national anthem at the beginning
where
the girl just butchers the Canadian national anthem.
Yes.
And the play-by-play guy, who actually is an ex-NHL commentator, I want to get his name right. His name is Kurt Kielbach. And I didn't get it right either way. But he has that line of, well, that was borderline treasonous.
Yep. I loved that. Because it was horrifying.
It was bad. And he says, and my father didn't fight the Nazis. Oh, here we go. The puck drops.
He doesn't even finish his thought. I do remember that. And I wanted to be like, what was the end of that? But yeah, no, he was very good throughout. He has a lot of funny one-liners. Yeah. So speaking to the humor, he's a very funny commentator. And I think it's almost incidental, by the way. It's not necessarily intentional, but it's just funny.
It's interesting how when it comes to sports movies, because we had talked about during The Replacements, how having John Madden and Pat Summerall there added some legitimacy to it, and they were still very funny.
Yeah.
And I think back to movies like Major League and Major League 2, and I don't remember the actor's name, but the commentator in that film was a character and made the film 10 times funnier with 100%. His commentary.
Because they can add color because they have context as well. Mm-hmm. And I think this guy did the same thing. And and I didn't know that he was a real NHL commentator, but that resonates, that lands. I mean, it makes sense because he did comment well. And he was funny. I think overall it is very funny. There's just a few things that don't land for me personally, but I think overall it is funny. And to your point, it does have a lot of heart. And it's not just, you know, a slapstick comedy. It has it has a story to tell. And I think that's really good.
It's got a 69 joke, which is pretty highbrow. Everyone can laugh at it. Take 69. It's hilarious. And it's the douche character that says
it. I was going to say, it's such a douche character moment, but it is funny how it's handled. Like, again, that's something that I wouldn't normally think is that funny, but it's funny how it's handled because he just sits there and he kind of smirks and he's just like, he almost shakes his head and is like, is that number taken? Like, what is, you know? And it's just, he's almost resigned to it. Like, again, that's another moment of loyalty to me, because you can tell he's like, I'll just get it because my friend wants me to get it.
And on multiple rewatches of this, at first I was really annoyed by the Jay Baruchel, the Pat character. And I was also annoyed that he wrote the script and was like, I'm going to play this character. But when I rewatch it, realized he's supposed to be fucking obnoxious and annoying. I think some people will find him funny, but I feel like he's supposed to be sort of opposite of Doug, who's very soft-spoken and mellow.
Oh, yeah. He's a foil to Doug for sure, but he is annoying. Like, yeah. He is definitely annoying, and he is funny. But I also get the impression, I don't obviously know this person, but I get the impression that, like, he might be a little like this.
In IRL?
In IRL.
I don't know. I mean, granted, I've never seen him play himself, but I felt like this was meant to be. I've seen him
in interviews here and there, not whole snippets, but I just mean, like, not whole interviews, I should say, but just snippets of interviews. I feel like I've seen him be like, I think he's kind of that juvenile humor here and there. Mm-hmm. And like, it maybe stacks and gets old. But again, I do think it works here. I think to your point, I think he's supposed to be annoying, supposed to be obnoxious, but he's still funny. And I think, again, it's that Doug and him love each other that you're like, it's all good.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to call out, I got a couple little Easter eggs here, just fun facts that are sort of unrelated to anything that we've talked about. We mentioned Slapshot a couple of times, and I don't know that he even spotted it in this playthrough, but apparently there is a player named Hansen on the team, not a main character, but just skating on the rink with them, who's wearing number 17, which is a reference to Slapshot. So kind of paying homage. And part of me almost wonders if they had that in mind while making this film of, hey, we know this is one of the all-time classic hockey movies, but we know that there's a shit ton of homophobia in that and like these hateful terms. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could put a positive spin on, like, let's correct some of this vibe, which I think the NHL has actually done in recent years. I think a lot of sports are sort of being more progressive and whatnot.
Fucking
and some
finally.
People say keep it out of the sports, whatever the fuck you want. I don't really care. But I think this movie maybe is trying to undo a little bit of that. Let's be very like positive about these kind of things. So I thought that was cool. There's a few cameos and references. I don't know if we have to call them all out, but Trailer Park Boys. Have you ever watched Trailer Park Boys? That's another one that's I've heard it's very similar to Letterkenny. It's a Canadian, fast-paced Gilmore Girls
dialogue
comedy.
I've heard of
comedy.
It, but I haven't seen it. No.
Yeah, and those guys make a cameo on the hot ice. They're sort of the producers that he's yelling at for
Oh my God, hot ice. Yeah, I forgot about that moment. Wow.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I did notice this time was that in this, they're playing minor league hockey. They couldn't get the rights to use any actual minor league hockey teams. And part of your budget is costumes, right? So when you have to get all these logos and jerseys and stuff made, apparently what they did to save on budget was make a lot of the opposing team's last names really short so they wouldn't have,
to print so many.
Yeah,
that vibes. Yeah, Ross Ray, four letters.
Right, four letters.
Yeah, you know, the one notable exceptions are the home team, quote unquote, the, you know, Halifax guys. They have longer names than you're not going to spend that money on their opposing team. Of course not.
Yeah. I have not read the book, so I can't speak to the accuracy. Maybe you can read that after you read Beartown. But I wanted to point out the one thing that I do know that really happened is that the butt goal that happens in this film is a real thing. He scored a goal off his ass. I don't know if it was his very first goal, but it did happen.
That is hilarious. What if that is his first goal? That'd be funny. I made my hockey score debut with my ass. Wow. Yeah, and I just love how much credit they give him anyway. You know what I mean? They're just all
so proud of him.
They're like, listen, you got a lucky ass. Thanks so much, man. but yeah, I just love the camaraderie of that team as it evolved during the film.
Totally, totally agree.
All right. Well, I think all that to say, guys, I was pleasantly surprised by this one for sure. And obviously Lamar liked it, but I think it's still worth a watch for sure. I don't know about the second one. I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to that. But I think it's absolutely worth a watch and very wholesome.
I think it's good that you can critique sort of some of the humor and giving that female perspective on, hey, if you're a woman, there's some things in here that are probably going to irritate the shit out of you.
Yep.
But there's also a lot of other really good parts and things that make it worth watching. So I like that you bring that perspective of you're not like 10 out of 10, but you can still enjoy this film and it's worth a watch.
Yeah, I think it's worth a watch. And I mean, unfortunately, there's lots of things that we watch as women that could be considered offensive. None of this is wildly terrible. It's just you know, there are some
misguided.
Things.
Misguided.
There's some things that just don't land, you know, whatever. But
yeah, the coach says a lot of things that are
Yeah, he's the biggest. He's actually one of the more problematic characters for sure. In a number of ways, because he calls his players ladies, you know, he does shit like that. It's like, okay, yeah, they're tough bitches is what I'm hearing. Thanks so much.
Yeah. But I will say the one thing, and I don't want to offend anybody out there, but the one thing that he says that might rub some people the wrong way, but I totally agree with, is he says, this is not fucking baseball. As a hockey player, I'm just like, yep.
I mean, it's hockey not baseball, but I feel like that was kind of obvious, right? Like, it's not baseball.
You're taking it in the literal sense.
Like, I'm taking it in the middle. I'm taking it in the literal sense.
You know what? He's right.
I can accept it in the literal sense. I don't know about the rest of it, but yeah. Well, anyway, all that to say, guys, we absolutely think you should give this one a watch. Mackenzie was pleasantly surprised and proven wrong. But thank you for joining us for our inaugural April. It went really well, I think.
I think so. We both enjoyed, but we gave better than fives. Like everything we suggested.
Nothing was
watchable.
Like I fucking hated it. Right. You know what I mean? So I think we did pretty well introducing each other to some new stuff. So that was good. But yeah, so come back next week. This will be our first episode in May next week for anime.
M-A-Y at the end.
M-A-Y. This is our month of animation films. We haven't done much of that and we're kind of excited. But we're going to be starting off with How to Train Your Dragon, which is a nice little segue.
If you didn't get your fill of Jay Baruchel saying fuck and shit and bitch this week, you can get it next week in How to Train Your Dragon, right?
It's the much more wholesome version of Jay. Yeah. Thank God. But yes, you do get to meet Toothless. Okay, I'm already excited. But yes, come back, join us for that. We're super excited to talk about How to Train Your Dragon. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.
In real life, no less.
IRL.
IRL.
Bye.
Bye.